Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and it's Halloween, so we're going to wrap up our three-part series we call...
Soundcheck's House of Horrors.
I'm going to miss that. I never knew my laugh could be so sinister. Anyway, we've been asking some of our musical guests and our listeners to weigh in on our question, who is the scariest musician ever? And we got a really great, really unusual answer from Thomas Dolby. Listen to this.
The scariest musician or musical moment for me ever was Stevie Wonder. In 1985, I was preparing for the Grammy Awards performance, which I was going to do with Stevie and Herbie Hancock and Howard Jones. And we were in his studio the night before trying to get ready for it. And it wasn't coming together. And I lost Stevie. And I wandered around this big building, this old cinema in LA, looking for him. And I found him in a box room, surrounded by files, kneeling at an upright piano, just jamming on the piano. And I said, hey, Steve, we've got to get this thing finished. They want us to do the national anthem. So I was thinking we'd do sort of like a sexy hip-hop version. And he said, no, we can't do that. And I said, why is that? He said, because Marvin tried that at an NBA finals a few years ago. And you know what? He never got on TV again till the day he died. And I said, amazing. Well, that must have sounded fantastic. What did it sound like? And he thought for a second. And then he channeled Marvin Gaye singing the national anthem. And he played and sang it for me there in that little tiny box room. And I swear to God, my heart stopped. And he just got up and wandered out of the room. And any lick that he played or sang, I would have given my right arm to ever be able to produce a lick like that. And it took a full minute for my pulse to return.
Thomas Dolby giving us a spooky, uncanny, possibly supernatural musical moment. But let's face it, neither Stevie Wonder nor Marvin Gaye is going to appear on anyone's list of scary musicians. Who is on that list? We'll find out right after I tell you what else is on the show. We're going to be speaking with the two brothers at the heart of the long-running rock band Sparks. They're one of those groups where you hear the songs and go, they wrote that? And live music from Sun Lux, whose new album is a great combination of indie rock, chamber music, and electronica. But first, back to our question of the week. Who is the scariest musician ever? You sent us some pretty interesting responses, and it's time now to start pitting some of those nominees against each other in a special multi-round speed dating style edition of
Soundcheck Smackdown.
And joining me here in the studio today, Chris Weingarten, music critic for Spin Magazine. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you much.
And Melissa Locker, freelance music and TV writer for outlets like Time and Rolling Stone, also with me in the studio. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
All right, so guys, it is time to begin the SmackDown. Let me explain the rules. We're going to present each of you with a pair, a kind of thematically related pair of musicians, and you guys have to decide who is the scarier of the two. Pair number one is the classic matchup. It's Ozzy Osbourne versus Alice Cooper. All right, so Alice Cooper, Ozzy Osbourne. Melissa, who do you like?
I got to go with Ozzy Osbourne on this one. Alice Cooper just let it cruise, which I think alleviates anything you could possibly have to say about Alice Cooper having ever been scary.
I'm going to have to agree. Alice is a golfer now.
Yes.
I think he goes to church. And Ozzy once got really high on acid and shot all his house cats, I think, is as that apocryphal story goes.
Both have been rumored to bite the heads off live animals. In Alice's case, it really was a rumor.
Yes.
In Ozzy's case, he really bit the head off a bat.
Sure.
I believe he also snorted a line of ants.
A line of ants. in front of Motley Crue, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so you guys think Ozzy Osbourne. Here are some of our recent guests and their opinions in this first pairing in the SmackDown. First, the owners of Blood Manor, which is the haunted house right across the street from our studios, Jim Farrow and Jim Lorenzo, this is whose side they come down on.
The guys in Kiss, but Alice Cooper maybe.
Yeah, Kiss was just fun.
Yeah, they were fun. Alice Cooper was more that way.
What was it that freaked you out about Alice Cooper?
Biting the heads off.
He was way before Ozzy. Yes.
With doing wax stuff.
Alice Cooper was the pioneer, if you will. That's true.
All right, so the guys who should know, guys who run the haunted house.
Well, you know,
say Alice Cooper, but hang on, Chris, because coming to your rescue is none other than Daryl McDaniels, DMC, from Run DMC.
His movements, the way he speaks, the records that he made, even everything that happened in his real life. He's really a monster.
Ozzy Osbourne is DMC's choice.
Wow.
So he agrees with the two of you.
He's a smart man.
All right, so Ozzy Osbourne wins pair number one, the classic matchup. Now, pair number two is our band throwdown. First, Insane Clown Posse. You wicked clowns would like to sing with Zap. And Slipknot. If I have to give my life, you can have it. We are the Bulls of the Maggots. All right, guys, which scares you more, violent clowns or Texas Chainsaw Massacre-style masks plus a clown? Chris.
Well, I've actually met the gentlemen in Insane Clown Posse, and they are absolute gentlemen.
I don't want to hear that.
they are family men and sweethearts who have a lot of great ideas about theater and community and the things that they are passionate about. Slipknot, you know, actually has been known to sniff dead animals before they go on stage and throw.
For what purpose?
From what I understand, or you know, to sort of get the stench of death in them before decimating an audience. They will throw each other's bodily fluids at each other on stage, and you know, generally, I would say that is a lot scarier to get on you than a bottle of Faygo.
Mm-hmm. Which is the soda?
Which is the soda of choice for Insane Clown Posse? Yes.
All right. So Chris Weingarten coming down pretty clearly on the side of Slipknot. What about you, Melissa?
I gotta agree. Slipknot is not anyone I would want to be stuck in an elevator with. You know, I love the ICP. They're not only are they like kind family men who yes dress like clowns on stage, but they're also really smart businessmen who have generated a vertically integrated company that makes tons of money for Detroit and for themselves.
I don't know what that means, the vertically integrated part, but it sounds good to me. So Melissa Locker and Chris Weingarten in agreement, Slipknot. We're speaking with Chris Weingarten, senior editor at Spin Magazine. Melissa Locker is a freelance music writer for outlets like Time and Stereo Gum and Rolling Stone. Let's see what happens with pair number three, our disturbing voice challenge. First, from the band Odd Future, we have Tyler the Creator. Versus the doyen of the downtown avant-garde, Diamanda Galas. Now, you're laughing, but both of these people in live performance can be genuinely terrifying.
Absolutely. And I've seen them both live, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, in a live context, Tyler is definitely scarier.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen him be not especially kind to sound men or their microphones. you know, people can get injured.
Yeah.
Even
on Jimmy Fallon, where he was presumably on his best behavior, he went running over, leapt on his back.
Pounding on him. Yeah. You know, a kinetic performer always brings a sense of danger.
Mm-hmm.
See, yeah, that's exactly why I would disagree. It's those wild antics that he whips out on every occasion possible. It just shows that he's just like a young punk showing off, trying to, you know, I'm going to have this reputation. But Diamanda Galas, that woman is deeply disturbed on some kind of awesome level. But she just stares at you with those crazy eyes, and you want to kind of slip off to the corner and curl up in a little ball and kind of hope she goes away.
I would do anything to hear them collaborate.
That would be amazing.
So, Chris going for Tyler, the Creator, Melissa going for Diamanda Galas. I have met Diamanda. I've interviewed her. She is a lovely person. She's really smart. But, man, when she gets out on stage, the curtain comes down and something happens. And that she unleashes that three-octave voice. Yeah. It is a high-octane performance.
Yeah, she gives you, she gives you goosebumps.
Absolutely.
Tyler, the Creator, no goosebumps.
He might give you a bump on your noggin, though.
There were, maybe this doesn't break the tie, but I will point out that there were several listener nominations for Diamanda Galas on the Soundcheck website. Pair number four is people with a record. Record in quotes.
Word.
We have Varg Vikernes of the Norwegian black metal band Borzum. Versus that wannabe musician, Charles Manson.
People say I'm no good.
All right, now this is a tough one because everyone knows who Charles Manson is.
Right.
Varg, if you're not familiar with him, has already been convicted of murdering one of his fellow musicians and burning down a number of rare old stave churches in Norway, mm-hmm. got out of jail, has been arrested recently again for planning a massacre, and is now going to stand trial for inciting racial hatred and glorifying war crimes. Chris?
I might actually go with Varg on this one because, A, he's out.
For the moment.
He's out and he is an unrepentant racist and he actually murdered people. I think Charles just got other people to do his bidding, if I'm not mistaken. So I would definitely go with, I definitely would not want to be in a room with Varg. Being in a room with Charles would be, you'd be at risk at falling under his spell possibly, but...
Interesting. Melissa?
There's something about the whole kind of black metal scene that it's meant to sort of terrify you. And he's the main guy in that who's just out there. I mean, not musically, but he's just like the person that most people know. And he's burning down churches and murdering his own friends. Like, he's not someone that you necessarily want around.
Does not pass the stuck in an elevator test.
He does not.
I got to say, Varg Vikernes was my sort of number one with a bullet when we first came up with this idea of trying to find out who the scariest musician is. Manson, convicted of conspiracy to commit murder.
Right. Not quite
Varg as scary. Varg Vikernes actually did the deed himself. Okay. People with a record goes to Varg Vikernes. All right, pair number five is what we call the Crazy Eyes Battle Round. G.G. Allen. Versus Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
I put a spell on you. I love you!
We got a voicemail from Judith about him.
In terms of really scary kind of guys, I think there's no doubt it was Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
All right.
G.G. Allen is my choice for the scariest musician of all time, hands down. Just, we could talk about guys like Alice Cooper and Marilyn Manson or whatever, but, they are of that Aleister Crowley school. They deal with scary themes in theater. Like, G.G. Allen is more like a tiger, like being caught with a raw... animal who will not only throw his feces, but you know, eat his feces and punch people and throw mm-hmm. chairs and destroy equipment and go absolutely berserk. You know, it's forget being in an elevator with the guy. I don't want to be in a medium-sized room with the guy.
Yeah. Would you choose the room that had Varg Vikernes in it?
Oh, man. You know, if that room was a prison cell.
All right. So Chris, going with G.G. Allen. Melissa?
I mean, I love Screamin' Jay Hawkins, and he definitely had his, like, spooky moments where he would sing to the skull, and he would kind of stare only at the skull instead of without even looking at the audience. And, like, it's definitely spooky, but G.G. Allen is G.G. Allen. There is nothing that any performer could probably ever do to top him in the sort of horrifying genre. Yeah. There's nothing. He did it all.
Any redeeming social values there in the music of G.G. Allen, in the performance?
Nope. I'm going to go with nope.
I would say that the man made an attempt to make rock and roll dangerous again, and he succeeded.
All right.
You know?
Also disgusting.
All made right. rock and roll disgusting.
A landslide victory for G.G. Allen.
Well, you hate me and I hate you.
Some of our other listeners had some other names I just want to throw out there, especially this one, given the news that we heard earlier this week.
Of course, I've been thinking a lot about Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground the last few days, but as it so happens, I was thinking about him a couple days before he died because I was listening to the broadcast with Daryl from Run-DMC, who was talking about this album that meant so much to him and saved his life, and there were songs of Lou Reed that did that for me, but there was also another song that I heard that disturbed me. When I first heard it, it was Venus and Fur, and it really disturbed me.
Shiny, shiny, shiny boots of leather, whiplash girl child in the dark.
That is Joshua calling in from Alphabet City and suggesting that Lou Reed was a scary musician, which he was.
I would say Lou Reed is more of an intimidating musician.
Right.
Like he's yep. you know, it's like you're not scared of Lou Reed, you're scared of Lou Reed insulting you.
Right. I think he's more terrifying for music journalists than like music fans.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
I would even say that John Cale was probably the scariest part of Venus and Furs with the haunting, you know, the
mm-hmm. viola that you hear in that
exactly,
song, Venus and
exactly.
Furs. That's John Cale, but that is Lou sort of intoning this pretty explicit song about S&M, so...
It did scare me. It opened my eyes as a child.
Really? You heard that as a child understood what it was all about? And...
Yeah, my parents were children of the 60s, and so they had, like, my dad, like, saw the Velvet Underground probably 10 times, and he had the record with the banana peel sticker,
and
we would listen to it.
Man, I couldn't imagine going on a New York radio station that's so vanilla that people are freaked out by S&M.
Chris Weingarten, senior editor for Spin Magazine. Melissa Locker writes about music for outlets like Time and Rolling Stone and Stereo Gum, and they're here for the Soundcheck Smackdown, the House of Horrors edition. Now, I did say that, you know, some of our... sort of our paths to scary take us through some unexpected territory. Here is round six. So smooth, it's scary. Kenny G. Versus Michael McDonald. Now, here's a SmackDown where I want to hear some actual smacking.
does Kenny G actually talk? Because I just have this vision of him, like, just playing that horn everywhere he goes and just kind of following you around your house playing that horn. And just, no.
So nope. he's the scary one for you?
Oh, absolutely. At least Michael McDonald, you know, is verbal.
Yeah. And Michael McDonald has cred, man. He's, you know, the regulate... the Warren G and Nate Dogg single, you know, sampled him beautifully.
Yeah.
So I would never be scared of someone so beloved. Kenny G, you know, he can circular breathe. That's a terrifying thing.
Meaning he can play the saxophone without coming
forever.
up for air.
Forever.
Now, I do want to point out
I mean, that
you disqualified Alice Cooper from round one because he's a golfer.
Yes.
When Alice was on our show, he told us that among rock musicians, he is the second best golfer.
That does not make him scarier.
Number one was Kenny G.
Kenny G.
Wow.
And he's holding his breath the whole time. That's some serious Cronenberg body horror stuff, man, to keep me away.
And that's going to do it for our Soundcheck Smackdown. I'm going to give the last word to Todd, our listener from the Lower East Side, who has another suggestion for Scariest Musician Ever. But before we turn things over to Todd, let me thank our two warriors, Chris Weingarten, senior editor at Spin Magazine, Melissa Locker, freelance writer for Time and Rolling Stone, etc. Guys, thank you for being with us in the House of Horrors.
Thank you so much for having us.
The scariest person in rock was HR. The first time he jumped on stage when the Bad Brains played at CBGB's and the entire place erupted in a mosh pit from wall to walls. There was nothing staged about it. HR was really scary.
Up next, Ron and Russell Mayle, the brothers behind the shape-shifting electronic pop group Sparks, and later, a live performance from Sun Lux. This is Soundcheck. It was a grand old time we had. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Some musicians are just destined to be influential, and being influential can be great, don't get me wrong, but it might not end up making you a household name. Take this band, Sparks. She was a wonder girl, a song-like girl. She was a wonder to her friends. It's a wonder that she always started trends. Sparks is an electropop act that's been around for 40 years, always kind of cutting edge. But they always seem to change their sound before that cutting edge could start to dull. You can hear their influence in the theatrical glam pop of Queen, the straight-faced humor of 80s new wave acts, and in a lot of young underground electronic acts that we've hosted recently in our studio. But today, I'm joined by a couple of originals, Ron and Russell Mayle, the two brothers who founded Sparks back in the early 70s. Ron, good to see you.
Thank you.
And Russell, good to have you here as well.
Thanks.
I actually want to start by, you guys never lived here in New York, but in the 1980s, if you wanted decent music on the radio, there was none here in New York, but there was a station out on Long Island called WLIR.
Right.
You know it,
yeah,
Russell.
Yeah.
So they used to play a couple of your songs, and this was my introduction to the band Sparks. That is the song Cool Places by Sparks, a duet with Jane Wheedland
from the Go-Go's.
So that was, as I said, that was my introduction to Sparks. But you guys have had such a long career that there are going to be people saying, I never heard that. I heard Sparks back in the 70s, or other people saying, I had no idea they went that far back.
It's pretty schizophrenic, the... it's a pretty unique situation, in any case, Sparks, because like our earlier roots in England in the 70s, where there was a big impact there, and a lot of people in the States at the time, weren't aware of what we were doing you know, a song like Cool Places that you played was not as successful in Europe, and mm-hmm. so it's less known there. In the 90s, we've had really big commercial success in places like Germany and France, and then and things move on now into the 2000s. So it's really, it's an odd situation to have people coming to our shows from different eras.
Well, and
not
different generations,
knowing,
right?
Yeah, different generations, and not exactly knowing, you know, that some, we could have done Cool Places, for instance, last night. We played in New York, and maybe half the audience wouldn't even know that were that, what that song is.
Right.
And so it's a it's peculiar.
Everyone who knows this band
right.
has run a different kind of version of the band that
and,
they know.
And also we've really been fortunate because we really detest nostalgia. And so a lot of the people that are coming now to the shows are people that have just discovered us mm. online and, you know, with YouTube, old YouTube clips and that sort of thing. So it's... you know, it's inspiring to see that.
Now, is this part of the curse of being, quote-unquote, ahead of the curve? People have said that about you guys almost for all of your 40
yeah,
years.
Yeah, we're trying career. To slow down so we can capitalize on things for once. But we generally, we get shoved into different areas, you know, with different kinds of music. But we always feel like a little apart from whatever the direction of music that's going on, and then we don't like to stay with a particular direction for very long as well. We get easily bored, and we think that the audience does too. This is the number one song in the world. Why are you giving it down? Maybe you're closer.
Easily bored. Okay, well, there have been various ways you've combated boredom over the years.
Some we can't talk about.
Well, the one I was going to mention is 21 albums in 21 nights.
Yeah.
That was in London, right?
Yeah, in London a couple of years ago. We decided on the release of our album that's called Exotic Creatures of the Deep, how can we best launch the release of that album. He said, well, that's our 21st album. Why don't we attempt to play all 21 albums in their entirety on 21 nights? And
consecutive nights?
It was consecutive nights, yeah. And it was an undertaking, to say the least.
I'm sure. And now you've gone for the opposite end of the experience with the Revenge of Two Hands, One Mouth tour.
We're going out for the first time ever in Sparks' history as just the two of us. Sparks mm-hmm. has always basically been the two of us with Ron's songwriting and his lyrical slant and then my vocals, and then that's been put into different contexts, but we've usually had bands with us
right.
throughout our whole career. And we thought, again, well, what if we attempt to do songs from our past history but doing them in this format? And so it's been equally as daunting, the task of having to rearrange songs that on recordings can be really elaborate, but
right.
doing them in a way that we wanted to not make this an intimate singer-songwriter evening either, because that kind of thought repulses us. So we thought...
Wait a minute. You're repulsed by the idea of intimate singer-songwriters?
We are.
Deeply.
We wanted to figure out ways of retaining all the energy and the scope and the size of Sparks in the recordings, but of figuring out a way to do that with one keyboard.
Okay. So if Bob Dylan came to your home and sat in your living room and wanted to sing you some songs,
if it was Bob Dylan, we'd say yes.
Okay. Yeah.
But there ain't many Bob Dylans.
True enough. We're speaking with Ron and Russell Mail. They are Sparks. They've been the core of the band for these many years, and now billing themselves as Two Hands, One Mouth. It's Ron's two hands on the keyboard, Russell's mouth, the vocals, no band, no computers. How far back do you guys go? Do you go all the way back to, This Town Ain't Big Enough for the Two of Us?
We do, actually, yeah. So we've been doing that because that one, it seems like that's Everyone is now caught up in every country in the world on on that song. And so, yeah, we do that. And but we do a just a real sampling from all now 20, I don't know, it's 23 albums, whatever it is. There's a real sampling trying to hit one from each at least.
Let's go back to 1974 and Sparks' album Kimono My House for this single called This Town Ain't Big Enough for Both of Us. Town Ain't Big Enough for Both of Us from the band Sparks, an early hit from 1974 from the album Kimono My House. Ron Mayle, the keyboardist, Russell Mayle, the vocalist, with me on soundcheck. Ron, were you guys living in England at the time you made that?
We were. We actually had two albums out before Kimono My House when we were from Los Angeles.
Right.
And so we had two albums out and they did nothing, and we got an offer from Island Records. How about if you come to UK, and we'd always been Anglophiles, so we moved there, and the biggest surprise for us was that the first thing we released was massive in the UK, so we thought, you know, we'll stay here a while.
This was 1974. You can clearly hear, I mean, you can almost hear the members of Queen sitting up and going, "Ooh, what's that?" You know, I mean...
Yeah, we had our lawyers hearing that as well. So. a lot of other bands have really been respectful just in saying that what we've done has influenced them, so it's inspiring to us.
Yeah, at that time, 1974, glam is becoming a big thing in the UK. It's becoming a big thing here in the States as well, and it's becoming so big that it's taking on a certain kind of pretentious quality to it, which you guys skewered by making glam rock that was kind of funny. You know, there was always this sort of twist to the lyrics or a pun in the title. I mean, it seemed like you guys were having fun at the same time you were doing this music.
Well, we were, but and also we never really, you know, we were there at the same time as glam, and image has always been, you know, something that we kind of treasure in a small way.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we got lumped in with the whole glam rock thing, but we never really have ever considered ourselves a part of that, even though there are glam rock books and we're, you know, on page 42 and that sort of thing. But it...
Well, now you were both models at a young age, right?
At a very young age, yeah. Before modeling was cool, we were, yeah. Catalogs, bad catalog stuff.
So does that mean you were models before it paid well?
Before
it paid well. To say?
Yeah, before you got paid.
We're speaking with Ron and Russell Mayle of the band Sparks. Their tour is called The Revenge of Two Hands, One Mouth. That tour rolls into the WDET area on Monday night, November 4th. Sparks playing at the Crowfoot Ballroom in Pontiac, Michigan. And, Ron, you were saying before that you guys don't deal much in nostalgia. But here we are talking about, you know, some of your older songs. You're revisiting some of your older songs. As a musician, you can't just kind of put blinkers on and ignore everything that's in your past. So
no.
how do you do that?
Well, I mean, part of it is just the way that we're presenting these is kind of such a reworking of the songs that we you know, they feel new to us. But the other side of it is we're always working on new projects. So while we're doing this tour, even when we're preparing for this tour, we're working on new things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Especially one thing that is exciting for us upcoming is from our last album, which is called The Seduction of Ingmar Bergman. It was a project that was commissioned by the Swedish National Radio, and It's a narrative story of what if Ingmar Bergman had been lured to Hollywood, and then all the horrible things that happened to him as a result of him being lured to come there. And so now that's in progress of being made into a feature film.
Wow.
With Guy Madden. He's a fantastic Canadian director on board to direct it. Ron and I went to the Cannes Film Festival this year and attracted folk.
So, that idea of a radio play, you know, those were huge in Central Europe, especially in the 1950s and 60s and stuff. It's great that someone is still doing that.
Oh, absolutely. We were really thrilled when a country like Sweden, there were some fans at the national radio. They're sort of the equivalent of like the BBC or something.
Right,
but
right.
Sweden, that they have this program where they actually enjoy things like having musicals aired on the radio that are made specially for them. And so we took this as another challenge again to see if we could do this. And we think it's great when there are countries that support the arts in that sort of way.
Well, we kind of feel around here that radio can be a good storytelling medium.
Exactly.
So.
You're the good guys.
Let's hear a little bit of this radio musical that the band Sparks did just a couple of years ago.
Jag är Ingmar Bergman. Ni kanske eller kanske inte känner till mina filmer. Ni kanske eller kanske inte vet någonting om mig som person. Hur som helst. De märkliga händelser som inträffade efter det varma och oväntade mottagandet av min film, Sommarnattens leende, är inget någon har vetat något om förrän nu.
That's called I Am, Ingmar Bergman from the Sparks album and radio musical called The Seduction of Ingmar Bergman, now being turned into a feature film. When do you guys think that'll see the light of day?
We're hoping now that it'll be sometime in the middle of next year that it'll start shooting and stuff. It's now the production companies that are attached to it are out there grabbing money from around the world, but it's all moving forward. Yeah.
Okay, that doesn't sound very friendly. Grabbing money from all over the world.
Grabbing money
for a good cause.
For
I
a good cause.
Right.
Yeah, artistic or whatever.
We're speaking with the brothers Ron and Russell Mail. They have been the heart and soul of the band Sparks since the 1970s, and now touring as two hands, one mouth. It's just the two of them: Ron playing, Russell singing. And they have released their first ever box set. It's called Sparks, New Music for Amnesiacs, The Ultimate Collection. 81 songs, all kinds of goodies that come with it, including a book and the introduction to that book written by no less a personage than Morrissey, formerly of the Smiths.
Yeah. It's he's another one that's, you know, is constantly in it, very kindly acknowledged Sparks' influence on him as when he was first starting out. And Come On to My House, which you played one track from, that was one of his first albums he had ever heard. And like you mentioned, in the box set, he did a really nice preface, a little blurb about what Sparks means. And if you can decipher what it says, then I think it's good.
Get your dictionaries ready.
Okay, so fairly typical Morrissey then. let's hear that song, Lighten Up Morrissey, from the band Sparks. We've been speaking with the brothers Ron and Russell Mail. Sparks touring through the WDET area on Monday night at the Crowfoot Ballroom in Pontiac. Ron, Russell, guys, great to have you with us. Thank
Pleasure.
You so
Thanks
much.
So much.
This is Soundcheck. Thank you. Up next, musician Ryan Lott performs as Sun Lux. Like Sparks, Sun Lux is fond of electronics, but for his performance in our studio, we'll hear some new songs performed acoustic on our piano. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Even in just these few seconds of music, you can hear the sounds of classical chamber music, electronics, and indie rock. This is from the ambitious new album by the composer, producer, and songwriter Ryan Lott, who records as Sun Lux. I think the new Sun Lux album is pretty amazing. But I'm also wondering how Ryan is going to be able to play some of these richly textured songs here in our studio, since he only has our piano at hand. But we are about to find out. Here is Ryan Lott, a.k.a. Sun Lux, playing his song Alternate World, live on Soundcheck.
Make what we can make.
That is Sun Lux, live on Soundcheck, with a song called Alternate World, which comes from the brand new Sun Lux album called Lanterns. Ryan Lott performing as Sun Lux solo here in our studio at our piano. It sounds like you broke it.
Yeah.
Ryan, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you.
So you've got... it's not quite a prepared piano, but it's a semi-prepared piano.
That's right. I've just done some preparation. I've thrown some, I've thrown some paper clips on some low strings for some lovely buzzing. I've got my switch, my sweatshirt, in the mid range for kind of a great muting quality, and then I have my iPhone up top, which.
The iPhone is off.
Yeah, it's off. It's on
so it's not going to make that kind of noise, but it does affect the piano sound. So essentially what you've done is you've turned a single keyboard into like three different instruments.
Yeah, like it's cool. Like there's some a little bit of unpredictability to it, you know, the way things will sympathetically resonate.
Yeah. Now, you write classical music, you write chamber music, you write these electronically textured songs. When it's just you at the piano, it kind of blurs the distinction between, say, an art song and a pop song. Mm. Do you make that those distinctions?
Oof. I don't know that I think about it like that. I guess just I'm always trying to think of something that I think is beautiful. One of the ways that I work that's maybe a little unique is that I often begin just with sound, with exploring the sonic potential of sound that I feel has an inherent emotional quality to it. And then through combination and juxtaposition of different kinds of sounds that maybe don't belong together and the chemical reaction between different sounds, that usually fuels a process of a creative process where I wind up in the end actually without a song, but with just a lovely like soundscape, like a world sort of. And then for me, and this is kind of why I never refer to myself as a songwriter, the lyrics and the melody are often like the very last thing that happen.
Wow. So with Lanterns, I mean, first of all, where does that title come from?
It's not a super specific, there's not like this, this awesome story or anything behind it, but it's definitely got, it's got a lot of, emotion. It's a word with a lot of emotion and a lot of imagery.
Well, and some of the imagery, what I've been able to glean from, you know, bits and pieces of lyrics is there's a kind of a sense of journey. Of going.
Yeah.
I mean, we heard it even in Alternate World, and the idea of the lantern to kind of lead. Was there
take me to an alternate world?
Was there a thematic connection to a lot of these songs?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, a lot of times, what happens when you make a record, at least in my experience, is you make a lot of material and then you make too much material, and or at least I do. I should speak for myself, and then the songs begin to sort of emerge from the mass that belong together, and they start to speak together as a whole, and there are certain images that they conjure up for me, and Lanterns was one of them. For some reason, they felt like these strange glimmering flashes in the dark. That's kind of how they felt to me.
Lanterns is the name of the new record from Sun Lux. It is out now. And Sun Lux performing Monday evening at Joe's Pub with Ensemble, but performing for us solo here in the studio. I want to give people a chance to hear this next song as it appears on the album. So the song is called Pyre. This is Sun Lux in all of its glory, produced on the album Lanterns.
We're resting.
That is Pyre as it appears on the Sun Lux album called Lanterns. Now, it's just Ryan here at our piano again, so let's hear this solo, unplugged version of that song. Once again, Sun Lux, live on Soundcheck. Sun Lux, live on Soundcheck with a song called Pyre. It appears on the new Sun Lux record called Lanterns, but that is Ryan Lott solo performing as Sun Lux here in our Soundcheck studio. The song, clearly, you know, comparing it to what's on the CD, Ryan, very different sound, but doesn't lose any of its drama in that performance.
I appreciate
there.
That. I appreciate yeah. that, yeah.
Sun Lux performing with Ensemble on Monday evening, November 4th, at Joe's Pub here in Manhattan, and playing for us live on Soundcheck today. Lanterns is out now, the latest from Sun Lux, a.k.a. Ryan Lott. Ryan, it's great to see you again. Thanks
Thank
so
you.
Much.
Thank you so much.
there's more music from this performance with Sun Lux, just head over to soundcheck.org to hear the full session or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Tomorrow on the show, Yonder Mountain String Band returns to our studio. The Colorado-based neo-bluegrass group has a new EP out, and while they're here in New York, they'll stop by to play live. Also, Tony Fletcher has joined us before. He's come in to talk about biographies of the Smiths and the New York music scene, but now he's turning the lens on himself in a new book about growing up uncool and loving cool music. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.